The cracks appear in my second marriage. Soon after we were married, in October 1992, Annie started talking about having a child. I wanted to travel, but any comment about that brought a sharp response as to how selfish I was. I had now been on two holidays the previous year, so what was my problem? Annie was taking birth control pills and I was checking that she was. Every time I brushed my teeth, I would do my forensic investigation. Each day the tablet was removed from the strip. Good girl. We had enjoyed our skiing holiday with Rob and Des so much that we agreed to ski again in late January 1994. So the issue about having a child now was solved for the time being. Or so I thought. In the middle of 1993, Annie surprised me with the news that she was pregnant. This was impossible as she was taking her birth control pills, right? I have to confess that I never actually saw her swallow them. But then again, I am such a trusting fellow. Despite her sticking to her story that she had in fact been taking them, I knew in my gut that she hadn't. If she was capable of giving out a wedding date without consulting with me, why should she need to discuss having a child with me? Or am I being unreasonable? I was livid. Of course I wanted a child with her, but not then. The projected birth date was late January 1994, when I was supposed to be reliving my glory on the ski slopes. At first I said that I was still going skiing and hopefully the baby would be born before I left, but obviously that view was driven by my anger, so skiing was now, well, it was going to be put on hold for some time to come. I quickly got over my anger and life moved on. Later that year we decided to extend our house and build on a large entertainment area. So, while the house was expanding, so was Annie. It was about around this time that I was running SPL Ohio and trying to restore it to profitability. As always, the hours were fairly long for both of us, and in between, we were overseeing building operations. Things were good. We had our arguments, of course, but nothing excessive, and they were always resolved after a period of time. With hindsight, I can see that we were both stubborn and difficult people, and neither wanted to let the other get the upper hand. Stephen was born on the 28th of January, 1994. It was an eventful day, as that morning, just before Annie started going into labour, our doctor informed us that our domestic worker's wife had been diagnosed with HIV. Neto is a Malawian who I had employed as our domestic worker a few years previously. I had just paid for a ticket for his wife to fly from Malawi to join him, as we'd thought that she could help with the new baby. As it turned out, she could barely speak English, and from the time she arrived, she was sickly. Annie decided to send her to our doctor for treatment and to be tested at the same time. I was in my office when I got the frantic call from Annie saying that she had started her labour. In the same call, she told me that Margaret had been diagnosed as HIV positive. What she failed to tell me was that she had not told Neto. I rushed home to fetch my wife, and as I ran into the house, I saw Neto and told him not to have sex with his wife until I got back from the hospital with condoms. He clearly didn't understand me, and it was only while driving Annie to the hospital that she told me that Neto was not aware of his wife's HIV status. Being a Friday, it also happened to be the weekend my children were to come to me. I decided that I was going to meet that commitment, as I did not want Brett and Shayna to feel alienated by the birth of their half-brother. So after I had Annie settled in the maternity ward, I checked with the gynecologist whether it was okay for me to leave for a couple of hours, and then went to fetch them. I took them home and explained what was happening regarding the birth and how it would not affect them in any way, but they did not look convinced. Brett was 9, Shayna was 6. Then I had to give Neto the bad news about his wife's HIV status. I really felt sad for him, as he'd been working hard over the years to send money back to his wife in Malawi, and clearly she had been unfaithful to him. A few months later, Annie went back to work on a half-day basis. We had certainly missed her contribution. What she managed to do in half a day was more than others did in an entire day. She tried to balance her time and efforts so as to give Stephen as much quality time as possible. In 1996, when Stephen was about 2 and a half, Annie started her new business. I thought this was a fantastic move for her, as it allowed her to develop a lot more self-confidence and self-esteem. On the exterior, she had always come across as confident. However, underneath, it was not always so. In typical Annie fashion, she launched herself into the business and did a fantastic job in managing the transition with the customers. The customers had been comfortable knowing that they were dealing with a company that was part of the Dimension Data Group. Moving to a small, privately owned company was risky for them, but very few customers were lost in the process, and she set about improving the service levels and response times. It worked. It was a profitable business from day one. The only problem was that she had no access to programmers to fix problems, add enhancements, and to customize the software. So guess who was saddled with this? My life then revolved around my day job at SPL and my night job helping Annie. Almost every evening was spent programming as well as on weekends. It got even worse when Woolworths, an existing customer, required a whole new application to be developed. At the time, all the franchised Woolworths stores used the software I had developed for point of sale, stock control, and ordering. The company-owned stores used software that Woolworths' IT department had developed. They had their own project team of over 10 people working on the same application that had to be developed. By comparison, there I was on my own developing the same application part-time. Financially, it was lucrative for Annie to have such a project, but for me, it was a nightmare. We had a 3-month deadline within which we had to, or should I say, I had to, deliver the project. So for the next 3 months I worked my day job, came home between 5:30 and 6:00, and worked until 2:00 in the morning. On weekends I worked almost non-stop. We never went out. I never moved from our home office. I never spent any quality time with Brett and Shana when they came over for the weekend. I met the deadline. I delivered the same result as their 10-man project team in the same time, but I was worn out. The fun wasn't over because a huge backlog of problems and customization requests had built up from all the other customers while I was bogged down in the Woolworths project. So the long hours continued. In the early days, when I'd first started the business with Cedric, I employed a very good friend of mine as a programmer. We had grown up together since primary school days, although he was a year ahead of me. By the time he completed his military service and university degree, I had established the company with Cedric, and we needed an extra hand. Marcel stayed with me as a minority shareholder for many years, but eventually left to do his own thing in 1992. He knew the software, so Annie used him as a programmer on a contract basis from time to time. In a way, this was what created great frustration for me. Annie owned 100% of the company. I had no idea what profit she was making, as she never shared this with me. In fact, she password protected the accounting software, so I could never see the financials. Marcel would quote her for each job, and she would happily pay him. Me? Nada, zippo, zilch. Here I was, busting my gut for nothing. The work I did for new projects and enhancement generated hundreds of thousands of rands revenue and profits for her business. We argued many times about this issue, but she had a view that she was contributing her equal share to the costs of the household, so that was fair. She also said I was earning my own salary, which I didn't share with her. The point she intentionally did not get was that I was working for her. After hours, and for no reward, so why should I bother if there was nothing in it for me and everything in it for her? At the end of the Woolworths project, she did pay for us to go to Mauritius for 2 weeks and paid for Brett and Shana to fly out to join us for the second week, but that was it. Her approach to her business clearly demonstrated to me that we were not in a partnership. She had forgotten that I had created the opportunity for her, convinced her to do it, provided the capital she needed to start the business, although she did pay that back, that I did all the programming and created huge profits for her. I chose to forget about it and live with it. But in reality, I never forgave her for it, and I never forgot. In 1998, I had an opportunity to make a career move, which I believed would be financially rewarding. I discussed this with Annie, and it was then that I found out that what she had planned for us. She decided that she wanted us to get out of the corporate world and the Johannesburg rat race. She wanted to live on the coast. She believed it would be a better environment in which to bring up kids. Stephen was now 4, and Annie wanted another child. This caused lots of fights, because I wasn't keen on another child, and she was dead set on having one. In her opinion, I was extremely selfish, because I had 2 children with Jenny, and she also wanted 2 children. In the end, I eventually gave in, as it was not worth the constant altercations. As far as my career was concerned, I had to make a plan. Her business was no problem, as it could literally be run from anywhere, providing that there were telephone lines for modem support. I was told that if we had not moved to the coast by the year 2000, then she would divorce me and move there anyway. So now I knew exactly where I stood, or is it more correct to say where she wanted me to stand. I resigned sometime late in April 1998 and took on a new opportunity at Computer Configurations Holdings on a 2-year contract, as it was only 2 years to the year 2000. Lessons learned. 55. Money is a dangerous thing, especially in any form of partnership. If it is not clearly defined as to how the money is to be earned, distributed, and/or shared, irrespective of the type of partnership, business, personal, or marriage, it should be addressed as early as possible and submitted to a written agreement to prevent any possible acrimonious fallout later. 56. Being placed under pressure to have a child or another child should never occur if you abide by Lesson 51. 57. Being forced to change your career or your area of residence should never occur if you abide by Lesson 51.